Welcome to this podcast from Kingdom Faith Yorkshire. Tonight's speaker is the Director of Christian Vision for Men, Carl Beach.
Right, thanks. Evening, guys. It's quite fascinating hearing what's going on, actually. We're going to do a couple of things tonight. So we're going to do a couple of things tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about CVM, just for 5 minutes or so, because I want to give you a heads up on the kind of stuff that's happening at the moment across the UK. So it's quite fascinating to hear what's going on. And then we're going to spend about 2 hours going through a mission strategy for Reaching Guys. Is that all right? It's about 45 minutes, don't get nervous. So we're going to spend a bit of time just looking at evangelistic strategies for reaching men and just kind of think about how men tick and how we integrate them into church things and kingdom activity and stuff like that. We'll try and make it a bit of an interactive time. So if there's stuff that you want to interrupt me about or question me about or disagree with me about, I don't mind that. It makes it quite a much more spiky evening if you want to do that. So I'm really quite secure about that, as long as you don't get too angry with me. But we'll chat things through as we go. Was very interesting to hear the sort of things that are going on. We seem to be in a period of time with CVM where God's suddenly, it feels like what he's suddenly done is turn a spotlight on the ministry. Well, actually not a, almost like a, you know, 6,000 watt halogen lamp, really, because it's suddenly growing exponentially. And we're not, you know, we can't trace that to any decision that we've made or anything that we've done. But stuff is springing up all over the place at the moment. So we're getting constant emails from people about putting on conferences and days and teaching. And we've had an Anglican diocese get in touch saying that they want to help us set up a northern office completely out of the blue. You know, I mean, just phenomenal stuff. We were sitting in front of a key kind of strategic leader in the UK, a very well-known guy, took me out for a very nice lunch. Gave me a bowl of soup with a curvy bit of bread in it. I didn't have a clue what to do with it. But really odd. But anyway, he took me out for a very nice lunch. And he leaned across the table to me with tears in his eyes. And he said, he's in his 60s, this guy. And he's a real faithful kind of warrior, really. And tears in his eyes and said to me, you know, I'm covetous, son. He said, the ministry God's given you guys is the key ministry for 21st century UK. And I believe he's right. You know, that was quite a moment for me, because in the years I've been involved with CVM, a lot of the time it's felt like we've been banging our head against a brick wall and we've been wading through treacle. And to be honest with you, there have been times I've really wanted to quit the whole men's ministry stuff, but it's been vision that keeps you going, you know, what God put in my heart a few years back, and working with good people kind of keeps you going. But suddenly something's stirring all over the place, and we're hearing this stuff springing up we didn't even know about, you know, and guys getting together and people starting to network, and it's intriguingly happening across the conservative and the charismatic churches. You know, there's a real unity taking place. So I think we've got about 400 men's groups. That's a small part of what we do, is sort of support men's groups across the country. It's about 400 of them. It represents about maybe up to 1,500 churches now, because churches are working together across whole towns and regions. And that's where the strength lies. That's why it's quite intriguing to listen to what's happening around the place and guys getting enthusiastic about each other's activities without being precious about it, which has happened far too often in the past. I think where the unity comes and you guys start to draw together, something very powerful can happen through that. So it's a real blessing to hear. So anyway, that's me. Just to give you by way of a heads up on who's talking to you, I'm 37, married to Karen, got two kids, Emily and Annie, one's 10, one's 8, got a cat, got a dog, got a hamster. The dog wants to eat the cat has nearly eaten the hamster twice, and so far so good. I've been with CVM now for 3 years. I took over leading the team 14 months ago, thereabouts. Before that, I was supporting my predecessor. And previous to that, I was senior pastor at a church in Essex, as you can tell from my accent, God's own county. So I was there for... What? What's the problem? You mean you've never been to Essex for a holiday? Why not? It's a great place. So I was ministering there, senior pastor for church, and previous to that I was church planting, trying to establish a new congregation. I'm getting involved in that again at the moment on the side. It's quite good fun. And previous to that I used to flog insurance. What? So previous to that It's insurance, and previously I was an engineering student. So that's me. I used to have a motorbike, and someone once told me about 3 years ago I was too fat and unfit. There's a bloke who looked like a pepperoni sausage, actually. He was very fit, he told me that. And he challenged me to cycle Land's End to John O'Groats with a bunch of mates. And so I trained up, and we cycled Land's End to John O'Groats in 9 days, taking him some of the big climbs. That was 2 years ago. And that was an evangelistic road trip. I'm going to talk about that in a bit. Half the guys we took weren't believers when we started the trip. Very fascinating time. And then last year, like actually June, we cycled from with the same group of guys, but with a whole new bunch of people who weren't believers, because the other people had become believers. We took another bunch of guys who weren't believers, and we cycled from Calais to Nice over the Alps. It was 1,000 miles, 92,000 feet of climbing. Did it in 9 days. Grown men cried with exhaustion. It was hilarious. You were going. In fact, I was going around a corner once with this bloke who's a consultant surgeon from Australia. He's now working in Sheffield. And this is being recorded, isn't it? Oops. Anyway, so we're going around the corner of this mountain called Col de Croix de Fer, which is an arduous above category climb, if you're into that kind of thing. And he said to me, I said, how are you doing, Stan? He goes, if I go around the corner and it's still going uphill, you're going to see a grown man cry. And it's kind of really Australian kind of drawl. And I thought, that's a problem. We've got about 4,000 feet to go, you know. And we go around the corner and the road just went up into the distance, and I heard this guy in an Australian sort of whine go just started crying over his handlebars. That was hilarious. Anyway, so we did, so that was that. And then this year I've just started training up again, because we're going to go from Nice to Naples and finish up the top of Mount Vesuvius. So it's another 1,000 miles. We've been doing 8 days this time, cycle up a volcano. Whole thing is about being evangelistic. We're raising money for good cause, doing stuff in Africa as a ministry as well, establishing a work hopefully in Lesotho into the future. And we're raising money for that so we can get guys getting involved in doing something for the kingdom. So opening up their hearts to the things of God. And then we're getting side by side and shoulder to shoulder with them in the context of activity, which we'll talk about in a bit. It's really, really important. So that's me. Next slide, please. So this is sort of working intermittently. Just move it on. Another one, if that's good. Okay. These are the kind of things we're producing. If you go on to the next one as well. That's great. Okay, so, go back one. Sometimes it's working, sometimes it's not. So we could have fun tonight. So this is going to be the next one that's coming out. You've all heard about Kaká, yeah, and his apparent transfer to Manchester City. But, you know, the famous thing in Christian circles is when he, you know, took his top off and he said, you know, I belong to Jesus. So we're just producing this new magazine called Scratch. The previous one we did was Motor. And I hope you agree they're kind of contemporary-looking magazines. They're not cheesy. Because so many things that are produced by church groups or agencies have been phenomenally cheesy and just look very religious. So we're trying to break away from that. That's a draft, because this doesn't come out until April. That's going to be a big, chunky magazine. We've got stuff by Bear Grylls in there and all kinds of things, you know, and ordinary fellas as well, just sharing life and stories and applying the Christian faith to everyday life. That's going to be a sort of quality magazine that you could easily sell for $2.95. And just to say to you blokes, we give this sort of stuff away. We produce this stuff in faith, we get thousands of copies, and we put them in your hands so that you can give them away. That's part of the thing that we're involved in. We don't believe we profit from the gospel, we don't copyright the gospel, we believe that God's given us a mandate to make the gospel relevant to men. So we stand in faith to produce this stuff and then put it in your hands. So you'll only find out about it if you go on our mailing list or you keep checking out the website. So on the table out the back, there's a card that says on the front of a picture of me, what makes a man a man. And on the back, there's a bit for your name and address. If you fill in your name and address and give it back to me, we'll put you on a mailing list and you'll get samples of our stuff, and we'll let you know when the stuff's coming out. Of course, if you want to bung us some cash as well and sow into the ministry, that's brilliant. But it's not essential. You know, we just want to put the tools into your hands. Reach is a bit of a networking magazine. I'm not thinking we're going to produce another Reach in its current format, but we're really into networking. I'd like to get something out a bit more regularly. So what you'll find in a Reach magazine is all the stuff that people are doing around the UK. It's not about CVM, it's about what men are doing on the ground, and it's about good resources that we've found out about that you guys can use. So we try and act as a bit of a network resource. So if there's a good idea in Cardiff, we'll even share it with the blokes in Glasgow. You know, if there's a good idea in Bristol, we'll even share it with you blokes up here, because we just want to create a movement. And quite interesting to hear, again, the news tonight of stuff that's happening. You're talking about this whole region coming on fire with men finding Jesus. actually what you need to know is that being part of CVM makes you part of a national movement. There is a whole lot of stuff and a buzz like this happening in pockets all over the country. And it's absolutely fascinating at the moment. We don't describe ourselves as an organisation, we're a national movement trying to cause a revolution, trying to stir up some dangerous, subversive, passionate Christians and cause some trouble. So that's what we're about. So when you partner with us, you actually become part of a whole national movement. You're part actually of a national band of brothers, and that's really special. You know, we have national days of prayer and fasting. Find it really powerful. You know, we get emails and testimonies in from guys, and we hold those days all over the country. God's really touching hearts, and prayer requests are sort of like that we were sharing earlier, just being prayed for all over the country. It's absolutely fantastic. So do invest in us, please. You know, join in with what's going on, because it's amazing. And you need to know that when you're putting your events on, and sometimes you're struggling to get guys out, or you really feel like you're standing on the edge, you know, of faith, trying to get something going, there are other men out there, hundreds of men out there doing the same all over the UK. So we need you guys to stand together. I have a vision, and I believe it's of God, that by 2013 we'll be filling up the stadiums and arenas again around the country, men praising God. That's what we really feel quite passionate about at the moment. So please do stand with us in that. This is a bit of shameless self-promotion. One of the things that I'm really concerned about is men getting to grips with the Word of God. Bible readings, you know, falling off the cliff in this country. So I produced a book called Spadework, which is 52 character studies of men in the Bible, which tours from Genesis almost through to Revelation. The idea is you read about a bloke, and it inspires you, hopefully, to delve into the Bible a bit. You can read a chapter in under 5 minutes, because most men's attention spans are under 6 minutes because of testosterone issues and stuff like that. We get fidgety and bored. So you can read a chapter under 5 minutes. I make some inflammatory, broad, sweeping brushstrokes and, you know, gritty statements in there, but try to stay, you know, in line with the Word of God, try to have it fueled by the Holy Spirit. And the whole aim is to get you excited about the Bible, particularly good for new believers or people. What do you want? What are you doing? No. No, go away. It's my turn. My turn.
There's an old lady about 85 who lives just around the corner from me, and she's deaf and she's blind. My wife has been reading to her through a hearing aid, Spadework, and she thinks, who's the bloke who wrote this book? I must meet him. And he's here. So first thing tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, he'll be reading Betty a chapter of Spadework.
Great. The best book she's read in 85 years. Wow.
That's what she said. It's that good. And to you, it's only £25 tonight. Okay, no, there's some copies out the back there. If you want to bung us a five and get one. And since all the royalties go to CVM, not to me, we try and sell them on at cost to you guys, because Script Union don't give you huge discounts when you buy up the stock. Okay, so we'll pass it on as least price as possible. So that's Spadework. Talkingahead.com is a website that's going to go live hopefully in April time. That's going to have a sort of a YouTube format to it. I'm just saying this so you know what's out there and what's happening, okay? The idea behind this is it will spread virally, so that there'll be over 1,000, hopefully, by sort of September, October time, testimonies on there of men whose lives have been impacted by Jesus Christ. And they'll last sort of 30 seconds. So when you open a website, there'll be all these faces moving out of you. If you click on one, it'll open up a movie screen, and it'll be a man telling his story, how God's impacted him at work. It might have been through healing, could be through intervention with his finances, could be about marriage, could be advice, tips about fathering, could be a whole load of stuff, handling, you know, marital stress, you know, all these issues. So eventually we want them all subject links as well. But this is for you guys to participate in, because you'll be able to sit in front of your Apple Mac, if you've made a wise decision and bought one of those, or a webcam or a video camera, and upload your story, and it will go online. And the idea is then, if you're sitting next to your mate at work, and you know, folks do find it hard to share their story, you say, well, check out this website, there's some great stuff on there, you know, and it'll be quite a sticky website, so guys just sort of delve in and out. It's just another evangelistic resource we're developing. The other big project we're working on at the moment is something called codelife.com. You heard this here first. We're working in partnership with Tear Fund globally to try and hammer the whole sex trafficking issue and the issue of violence against women, particularly in sort of Africa and in civil war areas. There's huge issues of, you know, rape and violence and, you know, sexual slavery and so on. So we're working with Tear Fund on a global level. You know, it's quite a challenging project. You know, how do you create such a positive peer pressure that a soldier in the Congo doesn't rape a woman by the roadside? Now, that's a big challenge. So we're working with Tier Fund on that level, but the UK version's called Code Life. And Code Life will be a series of statements, maybe five or six full-on statements that you guys would sign up to and say, that is a code for my life. That is my code of honour. That's what I'm about. So we're busy trying to come up with these statements at the moment. We feel that God's given us this, but you covenant together with another bloke. Now, maybe in your prayer triplet or prayer partner or something, you'd say, this is the value system for my life. And it'd be evangelistic as well. You know, it might be that we'll get businesses signed up to it. So if you're looking for a plumber or an electrician or a car mechanic, you'll have a mechanic who signed up to Code Life because he's got references and he's a sound man, he's a good guy. So we're trying to reinforce morals and ethics and integrity, but put Jesus as a man's master and commander right in the centre of it. So that's going to be quite a fascinating project. So do pray for us on that one, because linked to that is a whole attack on the porn industry that we're just about to launch as well. And one of our little viral projects we're doing, so we just set up CVM Media to do this, is to take on the porn industry by way of, you know, if a man does a search for something pornographic, maybe if he types in orgy or something like that, instead of getting porn, he gets a load of our stuff instead. So it'd be like movie files and links to Code Life and articles, and, you know, it might be Liam Baz talking into the camera saying, and it'll be subject, you know, defined. So it'd be, hey guys, I know you just searched for an orgy, but you got us instead because we want to talk to you about what this is doing to your life. You know, so pray for us, because we're really, really taking a battle to the enemy with this kind of thing. So that's the movement that you're involved in. That's the kind of thing that's happening. That's what the national profile looked out about a year ago. That since about 6 months ago, we last updated that. That's grown by about 15% in the last 6 months, I suppose. So, but that's just groups, not just other things that are happening as well. So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on out here. To put it in context, I suppose 3 years ago when I first started, we didn't have stuff like this happening, you know, relationships with churches in the north like this. But now from the northwest to the northeast, it's just amazing what God's doing and stirring up. It's humbling to be a part of it, really, and very moving. So please just stand with us, you know. That was our conference last year. We hired out a cruise ship, which is a laugh, and a bit nerve-wracking. We hired a cruise ship and we took a load of blokes to sea, went from Liverpool to Dublin, preached the gospel to a load of blokes who weren't believers. A load of blokes got saved, it was great. A load of blokes got inspired for their faith. The Guinness Factory Tour was fun as well. And this year we're going to Warwick Conference Centre, and we've got a pastor stream for leaders. I've organised a trailer of Lexus cars to come down so you get some free test drives. We've got Andy Economides speaking, this guy led Jay John to faith. Eric Delve is coming back to dive in. Hopefully one or two others. We're getting signed up at the moment. Graham Kendrick has been in touch because he, can you believe this, he sent me an email last year and said, God's been telling me I need to write worship songs for blokes. Can I come and see you? And he's been writing some stuff about going to battle. So we're calling our conference Stand Up and Fight. So, I mean, that's a real stirring taking place, isn't it? Oh, man, it's amazing what's happening at the moment. So watch out for that one. In terms of evangelism, moving on, my predecessor Richard, he did an interview on BBC Edinburgh Radio a couple of years ago. And while he's being interviewed about men in the Christian faith, this researcher sent out this guy onto the streets and interviewed 50 Scotsmen. And I said to them, you know, what's the first thing that comes into your mind when we talk about Jesus Christ and the church? And the answers that came back predominantly were that church is for wimps, women and irrelevant, which is interesting. Now, what I need you to do when we talk through the next sort of half hour or so is get yourself in a mindset of a bloke who doesn't normally go to church. He's not used to what happened tonight in terms of worship. He's not used to sitting and listening to teaching. He's not used to church culture. He probably thinks he's a regular church goer because he's gone to a few funerals and weddings and bar mitzvahs and stuff. So he thinks he's religious, you know, but he's not. He might have sort of a folk religion understanding, but he doesn't get the whole church culture thing. So when you're interacting with what I'm saying, you need to try and come at it from that mindset if you possibly can. Now, those answers come about because the media fuels it partly. You know, if you're a vicar of Sleepy Green Church in Sleepy Green and you're only having an impact on 10 people's lives week by week, and no one's been, I'm a Christian for the last 15 years, and that's just what you do, but suddenly you decide to have sex with the organist, Betty, you know, and you have an affair, you will end up on page 13 of the Daily Mail, and suddenly you're having a profoundly negative impact on 2 million people who read the paper that day. That's what happens a lot, because the enemy is very good at a conspiracy to get us in the media in a very, very negative manner. If you're a vicar and you appear on a soap opera, you're generally geeky and out of step and a bit odd, you know, or you're a cult leader. When I stood up in front of a group of squatters a couple of years ago and I said, my name's Carl, people call me Beachy, I'm a Baptist minister, what's the first thing that comes into your mind? This bloke just looked at me, he's sitting there like some of you, just with your arms folded, staring at me, and he said, you're a kiddie fiddler. First thing he said. Now, I can talk my way out of most situations. That was a little bit tricky. Now, I thought, what has caused that? You know, I mean, obviously, any scandal to the church, and it's right out there straight away, isn't it? So just trying to say, I don't want to paint a dark cloud, because I don't believe there is a dark cloud, as you've picked up earlier. I think there's profound breakthroughs taking place at the moment. But we need to understand the scene out there, you know, that's taking place. There is a lot of negativity. TearFund did some research last year, and the results of the survey, a very extensive survey, said that 75% of British men are either antagonistic or apathetic towards the Christian faith. I don't know what the ratio was, who was antagonistic and who was apathetic. I'd rather have antagonism any day. I can handle antagonism because there's a bit of fire in a man's belly. Apathy is the thing I worry about. You know, that's very hard to deal with, isn't it? But 75% of men are either antagonistic or apathetic. So, I mean, these sort of things, they are out there. We just need to be slightly aware of it. Apparently, according to the 2001 census and Christian research, there's 44 million Christians in the UK. Don't know if you believe that. I don't believe that. According to the latest census statistic, I think there's 250,000 Jedi Knights as well. So I don't think we can take the statistics too seriously. But that is, you know, that is what they say. And you know why it is. It's because when you get bitten by a Rottweiler and you weren't saved actually by prayer, and you go to casualty, and they ask you what your religion is because they're taking the census data, most men say, I'm C of E or I'm Catholic. You know, so apparently there's 44 million Christians in the UK, have a population of just over 60 million. 6 million say that they attend church on a regular basis. Regular basis means once a month on average. You'd be surprised how many rank-and-file people say, I'm a regular church goer, and actually what they mean is, I've been to a couple of weddings this year. Seriously, that's amazing. People do perceive themselves as regular churchgoers. 38% of attenders are male, according to the official statistics. But I've been to some very large churches recently, both conservative and charismatic, in the last year, who say to me anecdotally that their congregations typically are 70% female, 30% male. And that's where the conservative or charismatic, which is very, very interesting. Between 1980 and the year 2000, there's a 32% decline in men attending church, but the one at the bottom is the really serious one. There's a 49% decline in men attending church who are aged under 30. And that's very significant. I'm not equating church here to faith. I'm just telling you what's happening out there. Interesting, really. Sometimes I talk to hundreds, if not thousands of people, sometimes small groups, and I ask sometimes how many men, particularly in a large group, and I say, how many people here are under the age of 30, and I hardly get any hands when I'm talking to men. And it's quite interesting. We're working hard on that particular issue at the moment, but we just need to be aware of it, I think. Because the decline, as my highly accurate statistical graph represents, is serious. They're saying statistically by the year 2030 you've got zero men left in the church. Now, of course, I don't believe that's going to happen. I believe that Jesus is Lord. I believe he's Lord of his church. I believe he's building his church. But what does happen is that sometimes God throws in a bit of a curveball to make us think. And he makes us, you know, have to fight hard for something that we believe in. And typically in history, a decline of men has just happened before a few lion-hearted evangelists get raised up, and it's the men who then flood back. You know, in the Wesleyan and the Whitfield kind of times, it's the men that really flood back. In the Welsh Revival, it was the male miners who were running out of the mines to get to church. You know, absolutely phenomenal things were taking place. So it's always the men that come back in a revival. They flood back and everything else follows on from that. So I think we're in that time at the moment. So I feel quite excited, actually. That's what I feel bubbling up. I think we're in this sort of, we are in that situation now, but I think that that precedes the great battle where the men return. And I think what we're witnessing at the moment is the light beginning to shine and the tidal wave beginning to gather momentum. So, you know, I really, I'm not just saying this because those of you that know me will know that I'm not into empty rhetoric, but I do believe it's hold on to your seats time. And this is time to really get into the movement because it's very, very interesting the stirrings that we're seeing at the moment. I mean, you guys have heard of John Eldridge, right? Who wrote Wild at Heart. Okay, well, you can't get a hold of John Eldridge. I mean, no one can get a hold of John Eldridge. He lives in some, like, Fort Knox tower surrounded by machine gun nests. No one can get a hold of John Eldridge. He emailed me and said, I'd like to come to your conference. I mean, our conference, CVM, in Coventry, in England? You know, what? I mean, something's happening, isn't it? I mean, that was weird. I mean, I nearly fell off my chair when I got that email. I thought, why is he emailing me for? I mean, it's amazing. So I think there's some really interesting things are stirring up. Some of you would have seen this. So I'm not going to leave this as a profound mystery. I'm just going to put it up because I want to talk about it again because I do think we need to get this into our grey matter. You know, for years as a pastor, everyone always used to say to me, Carl, you need a really effective children's work. If you get an effective children's work, you'll grow the church. Not true if you want to grow the church through conversions. Well, so, absolutely categorically, because I've been there, done it, got the T-shirt for 13 years. If you run a good mothers and toddlers group, or a good Sunday school, or Holy Bible Club, whatever it is, and I've dressed up as a donkey for numerous years for the Holy Bible Club, and I've been a camel as well, and a superhero, with all my pants outside my trousers. I've done the whole thing for Holy Bible Club. Statistically, if you lead little Johnny to Jesus, 3.5% of the time, the rest of the family follow to Jesus Christ. If you win a mother to Jesus for a mothers and toddlers group, whatever it is you do, 17% of the time, the whole family follows. Win the father to Jesus, 93% of the time, the rest of the family follows. Why is it that Christianity Magazine and other things, publications like that are stuffed full of adverts for children's and youth workers? It's weird. I'll tell you why it is. Partly, we do need to have good children's and youth work, and I spent a year as a youth worker, and I really believe in it. I really do, so I'm not undermining that. But partly what it is, we've invested into a siege mentality. Christians are now thinking, how do I survive this pagan culture, rather than how do I get out there and really, you know, make a dent for the kingdom and win some people to Jesus Christ? And the siege culture basically says, we must provide everything we can just so that we can survive. So we've got to get a good children's worker in, we've got to get a good youth worker in. And what typically happens in the church is, first appointment, other than the pastor, might be a youth worker, then we get a children's worker, then we get a families worker. And it's all about provision for the Christians. And the Christians join the church with those workers. So if you create a good critical mass, if you want to grow through transfers, do that. If you want to grow through conversions, get some industrial chaplains, get some blokes out on the street, start getting a bit dangerous, you know, and you'll see some profound conversions take place. I really do believe that. Get a little bit radical, think outside the box, and it'd be quite interesting to see what happens. I'm still waiting for the first church to appoint a men's full-time pastor. That'd be a bit of a thing, wouldn't it? That would cause a shocking, you know, stir, I should think. But we'll see what happens.
Because York released somebody just to do men's work.
Brilliant. Is he paid?
No.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I just want to put this one up as well. You probably can't read that, but this is the effect of an absent father. Now, I don't want to put pressure on anyone here who's struggling because of a divorce situation or separation. I'm just saying this because, again, it emphasises the need for men to get their lives put in order before Jesus. There is a massive satanic attack, I believe, on the role of fathers in society. The government's beginning to wake up to it now, but even then they're trying to come up with administrative solutions for what is a spiritual problem. You know, so it's a big thing, really. But statistically, if a father is absent from the family, and you know that the justice system is really squared away against fathers in divorce situations, but you're 5 times more likely to commit suicide as a child if your father's absent, 30 times more likely to run away, 20 times more likely to have disorders, behavioural disorders, 14 times more likely to commit rape, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, 10 times more likely to abuse substances, 9 times more likely to end up in a state-operated institution, 20 times more likely to end up in prison with an absent father. And I'll add to that, the biggest cause of death at the moment for a man under 40 in this country is suicide. You know, there's a big attack on masculinity in men. You know, and I really feel that as a ministry, we're pointing out the emperor's new clothes. You know, we're saying, this is a problem, this is a problem. Now, we've come under some phenomenal attack for doing that at times. You know, I've been really, you know, panned, actually. I had all kinds of accusations of being sexist and ignorant and all kinds of stuff. And I said, well, we only do it because we love Jesus and we want to see men get saved and their families get saved and kids get saved. What's the problem, you know? But I think now there's a swing back and people actually begin to realise that we did have a message that was prophetic for this time after all. This is key, you know, get men in front of the gospel, get their lives put in order, and it restores the structures of society. I really, really do believe that. In the UK today, in terms of evangelism, and can I, before I say this, you know, I'm a, so you got my theological credentials, I started off, I became a Christian in the Brethren Church, quite a conservative framework, and I became a Baptist minister, I was church planting, I experienced the power of God, through reading the Bible and experience, becoming charismatic. And when I say that, that's because I do believe that you can meet someone for the first time who's never heard about Jesus, tell them about Jesus, and they get saved in an instant. I believe you can have words of knowledge and healing, all kinds of things, and God breaks into someone's life. I do believe that. But, there is a but. Statistically, on average, at the moment, it might be just because we're rubbish, but I just think it's to do with blokes being arrogant and cynical and disbelieving and bitter. It takes on average 5 years at point of first hearing the gospel for a man to come to faith in Jesus, on average. You know. And when I look back at my own life, I did hear about Jesus quite a few times before I even decided to listen to someone. Because I'm stubborn, you know, because I'm a bloke. And us blokes, we are quite complex people. You know what we're like, you know, we're quite stubborn, really. It takes on average 30 times now to hear the gospel before a man comes to faith in Jesus. This is why men's work can be so tough. And you know what we're like. You know, I've got a Skoda Octavia parked back at Eddie's place. It's 2 years old. It's only got 34,000 miles on the clock. It's got a full service history. It's mostly, you know, motorway miles. And if I said to you, you can have that for 500 quid and it's actually worth £6,500, £7,000, you'd still want to go and kick the tyres. You know, you want to read the manual. You want to check the logbook. I mean, I'd be saying, trust me, I'm a pastor. I'm an ordained minister in the Baptist Union of Great Britain. You still want to check me out. You want to do an RAC check. You'd want to make sure there's no credit on it. You know, because you're a bloke. You know, so you do expect people to ask questions, want to have a row, because that's what we're like. And some of you are sitting here now wanting to have a row with me already, because you're blokes, because that's what you're like. That's what we are. I'm standing here thinking, I want a row with myself, because we're like that, you know. So that's why this sort of thing happens. We just need to create forums where men can thrash it out and ask the questions. 80% of men who come to faith were bought by a friend. And when I say friend, I don't mean a contrived friendship just because you want someone to get saved, but because you really love them, so you're mate, and you care about them, and you care about their destiny, and you want them to have life to the full. And that's why they're your friend. That sort of friendship is where most conversions take place. 80% of men who come to faith in Christ were bought by a friend, but mostly female friends. Which is interesting, isn't it? It's women who bring people to church. You know, blokes have become pretty ineffective at building relationships and friendships and bringing guys to church. It's another interesting one. 95% of men are tongue-tied. J. John said that men are like Arctic rivers, they're frozen at the mouth. And I think he's absolutely right. You know, I think it's true. We're not good at small talk. I'm not good at small talk. I just have to accept that. I'm actually quite shy. You won't believe that, but I am quite shy. I only do this because God's called me to do it. I'm seeking to be obedient. I trust that he anoints me when I stand up to speak. In a party, I'm the bloke who's hiding in the corner. You know, as a school governor, cheese and wine receptions, didn't have a clue what to do. I didn't like it. You know, I'm looking at the floor thinking I'll just, you know, pastoral work, stressful. You know, I'm kind of a like an SAS hitman pastoral worker. We need to get your life sorted out and repent. That's why there's a problem. You know, just say it as it is. You know, small talk, endless, painful small talk for hours and hours and hours. You know, I just found really difficult because that's me. Now you're thinking, why are you in ministry? But that's what I'm like. And many men are like that. You know, you look at a group of engineers. Get a group of engineers together. I can say this, I've got an engineering degree. Get a group of engineers together. They're rubbish. Rubbish at talking to each other unless you give them a complex mathematical problem. Then they start having a row and debating and get all excited and, you know, and then they start talking, take the problem away and they'll go quiet again. Like, turn it on, turn it off, yeah, turn it on. Because they've got an agenda to talk about. So we need to understand that I don't always do individual faith-sharing teaching. We try and teach about evangelism as a band of brothers, as a movement across a whole area or region, where guys are standing together, shoulder to shoulder, to contend for the gospel, and they create an atmosphere that's easy for blokes to join in with that aren't yet believers, and over a long-term strategy where the gospel keeps getting repeated, where genuine friendships are built, and where, you know, we can create an atmosphere that isn't reliant on small talk. You know, we see men come to faith. That's the basic strategy idea. I'm going to go past that because of time. That is mildly amusing. But only mildly. That, just in case, young man, it's a pyramid. And I just want to say to you, really, just as a quick pause, that, you know, if you guys here really got going and you threw your weight behind things like these celebrations coming up and grassroots evangelism, you started to network together and really pray together, and you did that here, and they did that in Newcastle, and they did that in Cardiff, and they did that in Manchester, and they did that in Glasgow, I think we could see a national movement, the likes of which you've never seen before, happen really, really quickly, if we all did our little bit. Okay, so we have a four-level strategy for evangelism. Very, very simple. Birthed in prayer, soaked in the presence of God, you make some friendships, you mention Jesus in conversation, you tell them loads more, and then you see them become committed Christians. Easy? Thanks for coming. You've been great. Okay. Level one is doing stuff that gets you side by side other men. So it could be driving a go-kart, it could be doing a jet ski, it could be watching football, it could be, you know, playing golf, it could be, for instance, drilling something, anything, you know, give a bloke an excuse to get a power tool out, he likes it, you know, or an excuse to even buy one. Shoot stuff, shoot anything, shoot something, blokes like it, swing off something, fish for something. So basically, get creative. Do something that's fun. You know, have a, you know, use your imagination. You know, use your imagination. You know, we do men's work and we say, well, let's go for a walk together. Well, walking's good. Getting side-by-side guides is good. But be creative. We had a group down our way that did a burger, beer and picklocking evening. And I had some guy who, I think he used to be a villain, but then became a master locksmith. And the challenge was they put some food in the house and some beer, and they spread it around five different houses, all different elements of the meal, but only got it if they managed to break in. So they were going around, and he was doing like lectures and explanations of how you burgle a house, and when they broke in, they had a pint of beer and a burger. I mean, what a great evening. I mean, that's great, isn't it? I mean, that's just fun. So you just do stuff that gets you side by side. Now, these are my band of brothers that I did the cycling with. I'm not obviously a natural cyclist. By nature, I'm sort of more of a, I used to be into judo, weightlifting, rugby, that kind of stuff. But I taught myself to cycle long distances, which basically just takes a lot of training. But I went out with these guys, half of whom weren't believers, and we did stuff together, and they've become mates for life, you know. And seriously, all the guys that did the Land's End to John O'Groats ride for us are in a weekly Bible study now. I mean, that is phenomenal. I haven't did that. There was a mate I was with who organised that. He pulled it all in Sheffield. And he's just about to, he's looking at establishing some kind of informal church out of it now. Because the wives and girlfriends are coming and the kids want to come along. So they're starting to pull people in for food. They're talking about breaking bread together, you know, reading the Bible together. And they're bringing their mates who weren't on the cycle ride and stuff's happening. And it all came out of just cycling miles together. You know, think about how men communicate. Now, men don't communicate on the whole face to face. We're used to that in Christian circles, in church circles, because we're brought into churchianity and we understand church culture and we've been taught how to make small talk and pleasant conversation. Most of us aren't quite like that. And so most men actually talk like this, with arms folded over their shoulders. Have you noticed that? When you come into a room, you actually stand in circles. It's very rare that you stand quite close in and invade someone's body space. If you watch women talk, they tend to get quite close enough so that when they're talking, they can touch an arm or make physical contact. Now, some blokes are like that, but most of us aren't. What I notice when I'm doing talks, for instance, because I do a lot of evangelistic stuff for guys who are deeply cynical about the things of God and not used to coming in hearing a speaker, and they'll sit there for a while like this, and usually about 15, 20 minutes in, they're starting to relax. Because what they're doing at first is thinking, who is this bloke? He looks like he's 15. You know, who is he? You know, is he real? Is he credible? I mean, he drives a Skoda. You know, he's not right, you know. And sometimes, you know, even tonight, talking to you good, godly men, some of you sit there with your arms folded because the subject matter makes you feel a bit insecure, or you're not quite sure about evangelism, or you're not quite sure where we're going to go with it because you don't know who I am, really. Or you might have seen my picture on a photo and you think, picture on a photo? In a poster. You think, you know, but who is he really? And it takes time for you to kind of buy into it. So you need to understand that men coming way outside of church culture into your group find it difficult. If you find it difficult, they really do. So we need to understand that men communicate over the shoulder, and you create an environment where you can do that. On one cycling trip in Lanzarote, we have a sports week out there, I was cycling alongside a guy who had, he was a PhD holder, he was a lecturer in education, so he's a communicator, very used to academic circles and, you know, that kind of stuff, professional guy, shared a room with him, didn't speak to me all week. Hardly at all. You know, just grunted at me in the morning, grunted at me in the evening, because I'm the vicar kind of bloke. He made very, very polite small talk, but, you know, hardly anything really. Hello, good evening, did you have a nice day? Yes, that's great, thank you, you know, blah, blah. And that was it. Penultimate day, we're cycling up a mountain in Lanzarote called Tabayescu. Quite arduous, it's about 85 degrees Fahrenheit, it's pouring with sweat, pulled up alongside me, I can barely speak, absolutely shattered, climb goes on for ages, cycles up beside me and said, just want to say, Beachy, this week's been really helpful to me. My brother committed suicide 20 years ago. I've not been able to really process it until this week. So I just want to say thank you. Now, that was like a wake-up call to me. I thought, that's amazing. That happened because we're both exerting ourselves. He doesn't need to look me in the eye. It's safe. You know, he can whiz off if he wants to. You know, it's okay. He can talk. And he's observed me for a week. He knows I'm not too weird. You know, so I mean that to me just said the power of side by side is amazing in men's ministry and for each other. Because the thing is, talking about level one stuff, many of you guys or in your churches won't really know each other hugely well. Are you really a band of brothers? You know, are you really getting deep, transparent relationships? Are you really getting under each other's skin, or at least in small groups within the group, you know? And that might not be happening. So you might need to do that kind of thing yourselves first to build true, authentic brotherhood, which is deeply attractive to men, I have to say. Because there is an epidemic of loneliness amongst men in the UK. I mean, there really is. Just to throw another one out to you, you know, most men's best friends, in the context of marriage, most men's best friends are their wives' best friends' husbands. Got that? Most men's best friends are their wives' best friends' husbands. They're not mates of their choosing. Very brief example. My wife, Karen, everyone loves Karen. She's gentle, gracious, peaceful, beautiful personality. Everyone loves Karen. I polarise people. People either like me or they don't. You know, Karen, brilliant. She goes to a new area, goes to a school. People love her. She makes friends with someone called Vicky. They go out shopping together. They really hit it off. And they decide that it'd be good for the couples to get together. So Vicky invites Gary over. Karen invites Vicky and Gary, her husband, over for a meal. They come over on Saturday night. I'm doing a bit of cooking, get the wine open. You know, Vicky and Gary come in, and I find out immediately that Gary's into poetry and the harp, you know. And I've got to be his mate. You know, there's me, beachy, pike fishing, do a bit of cycling, fight my German shepherd dog, you know, chuck my kids around, that kind of thing. We're very, very different people. And what have I got to do? I've got to become his mate. And we struggle through the evening together. We kind of do it for the sake of our wives, you know. And then at the end of the evening, shock, horror, Karen and Vicky say, what a fantastic evening. Let's go bowling together next Saturday. And me and Gary looking at each other going, fantastic. You know, that's really good. Now, I'm sort of bigging up a bit. I'm exaggerating the point. But do you see what I mean? That's what happens. The women who are consummate professionals when it comes to networking, relationship building, drive the social networks. So you guys have got to create an atmosphere. You've got mates of your choosing. You start to create a good, vibrant social life. It's very evangelistically appealing. There's loads of things that you can do. That's what we've got in Bath, the Olympic Bob, say, start track, you dive in it, you jump off it, you fall over each other, you have a drink afterwards, you create some memories. Have you noticed that men talk about their memories every time they get together, the experiences that they shared and did together? You notice that? And it creates powerful bonds. Just stuff, anything that gets you side by side, you know, whether it's walking, ultimate frisbee, bike rides, anything. We did this in Bath and we do it in Billericay. In Billericay, what we did was get 30 metres of builder's plastic, cover it in foam and water, put it on the slope and chuck yourself down it. That's it. And have a barbecue. It's simple as that. Okay, first year I did that, I accidentally aimed it at a tree. I didn't realise I'd aimed it at a tree until I was halfway down. I was looking at the tree and I thought, that's really going to hurt. And I hit it with my shoulder. I slammed into it. Of course, being a bloke, you know, I just sprayed some deep heat on it and pretended that nothing had happened. But I couldn't feel the whole side of my body, you know, I thought that was really painful. About 2 weeks later, I was still in a sling and I was walking down Bidwicky High Street. And these two lads coming the other way, not in the church, said, there's that Muppet pastor who hit the tree on the builder's plastic. You know, all the barriers started to come down. It was great. Some people say to us that that kind of activity is ageist, and we're only recommending stuff for younger people. May be true, you know, but we do tend to say if you go for the younger guys, you'll get all the ages. If you go for the older guys, you don't get the younger guys. And the younger men need the older men, and the older men need the younger men. Go for the youth, and you will get everyone. Having said that, we had a 90-year-old woman go down that the following day. We'd never met her before, we just put her down it. She loved it. She thought it was great. Okay, do you want to see another idea for a low-cost level one challenge before we move on to level two? The rest of it only takes 10 minutes, so you might as well watch this. Here we go. This is a challenge for you all over the Scarborough region.
All right, you got this, dear.
So what we're going to see is that happening all over the Scarborough region. It'd be fantastic. You know, church on Sunday, people be walking down by the beach, see people diving into their jeans. It'd be fantastic. I think that's a new subversive Christian men's movement, actually. Backflipping into jeans across the UK. It'd be brilliant. Basic message, do what you're good at and invite a friend. I once spoke to 100 Christian golfers. Christian golfers in a Christian golf society. Not missional, Christian golf society. And I said to them, how many of you use golf for evangelism? Not one hand went up. Couldn't believe it. It's your ideal activity. You're walking, you're talking, you're doing stuff. This guy came over to me afterwards and he said, I have to say I disagree with you. I didn't put my hand up because I have tried to use golf for evangelism and it doesn't work. I tell you what, I'm sure God spoke to me and I said to him, out of interest, what do you call your golf society? And he said, the Ecumenical Golf Society. I said, well, that's why no one comes. You know, that's the reason. So you just got to get creative, but use what God's given you. Use your passion and invite friends to it. You know, just get going, have some fun, get out there, meet people, do stuff, create some life, break through the loneliness, just go and do stuff. Level two is any event with a speaker. And so we've got loads of speakers who can come out and resource you guys. And I'm just making a bit of an appeal here for you to work with us on this one. Our speakers list isn't full of celebrities, it's full of heroes. You know, they're good guys, they're living their life for Jesus, they're prepared to stand up and make their message count. You know, they make themselves vulnerable and they'll share their story. So we've got guys like Noel Fellows, who is a policeman, wrongly convicted of murder, came out, talked about the nature of forgiveness. You've got Major Cole Benfield, just been doing some bomb disposal in Basra. Angus Jameson just is a geophysicist working on oil rigs. You know, we've got huge cross-section of guys, from GPs through to mechanics, farmers, just people who come out and share their story about how God uses them and speaks to them in their daily walk. It's powerful stuff. Now, we need to populate that list all over the place so we're resourcing churches. So if you know a man with a good testimony who can stand up and speak, we'll get him on a speaker's list. You know, it might be someone here tonight. We'll take up some references and we'll get you on the list. We'll advertise you across the whole region through our website. But it's really kind of crucial ministry for us. Thanks, Eddie. So basically, we've done all kinds of stuff. So it's pie and pie, fish and chips, Chinese banquets, whatever it is. You know, you build the relationships, then you put on an event and you invite somebody in. Now, often what happens is a church starts there, but they haven't built the relationships. And they wonder why it's a struggle to get people along. It's because they haven't built the relationships in level one. You know, or they have a men's breakfast and it just dwindles. Now, when I went to my church back in Essex, the men's breakfast had dwindled. It started off at 60 people and it was down to 10 people, you know, when I went there. And it had gone down to 10 people really fast. So I went along to it to see what was going on. And basically, there was a bloke called Bill who used to make the porridge. And the porridge, he used to start making it at 6 in the morning. Guys turned up at 8 in the morning. By the time they got there, the porridge had become a foldable building substance. You put it in a bowl and you could fold it and you could unfold it. The other course was compote, which is like prunes and figs and stuff. Okay, the breakfast was held in a yellow lounge, which was actually green, which is one of those confusing church things. People go into yellow lounge, and it's green. It's really weird. And it had green, horrible bowls with chips on them and stuff. Not chips, but, you know, chips. And instead of going there, and they'd sit down, no one really knew each other, and they'd sit on rickety tables, and people would sit there and they'd say, what do you do for a living? Which is a typical question that blokes ask because they're pack animals. And that's why we stand in circles and look over our shoulders and look at our car keys and what car we're driving and what do we do for a living, because we're scratching and sniffing around each other, working out the hierarchy. So people would say, you know, what do you do for a living? I'm a carpenter. What do you do? I'm an accountant. And they say, oh, right, do you see the game? No, don't follow football. Right, then you're stuffed. What do I do now? So you just start folding the porridge and unfolding it. This is a soul-destroying experience because I hadn't built the relationships. And just as by way of an aside, don't ask people, particularly in this current climate, what they do for a living. Say, how do you use your time? Which is a very interesting question to ask a fella because he starts to dig under the surface of where they put their identity, which is normally their work. You know, so how do you use your time? But it's a soul-destroying experience, so we had to scratch all of that and start again. So here's an example of how to do it well and badly in one fell swoop. You can see what's good there. You've got a knife and fork on the table for breakfast, which means saturated fat is coming. Double fat boy, everything. I'm sorry to say, if there's a cardiac specialist here today, saturated fat works in men's evangelism. Load up the fat and the men will come. It's got to be worth getting out of bed for, particularly if you're attracting the younger guys. It's got to be worth getting out of bed for. Don't do prunes and figs. Do bacon and stuff. There's a nice touch. There's notepads. There's Yorkie bars on the table. Not for girls. Just a bit of fun, you know. Yorkie, not for girls. It's really nice. High quality. Stop men at work in the middle. Great. Can you spot the problem? What's all the fluff in the middle? What is that about? Now, I'm not saying put a drill on the table. Or you know, so I'm not saying that. I might be, actually. What I'm saying is, you own the event and you make it look really nice. I actually said that at Graham Kendrick's church just before we went up for dinner. When I went up there, it was all fluff and flowers on the table. I was so embarrassed, you know. I was so sorry. But, you know, you've got to own the event and make it look good. Now, sometimes when I said stuff like this, people have said, but not all men are like this and some men like flowers and blah. And I hear that. What I am saying is, just have some fun. Play to the cliche. Don't take yourselves too seriously. You know, relax a little bit. Have some fun. You know, put a scale electric track out. I mean, just be a bit boyish for. I mean, do it. You know, just have some fun, and the guys will like it. Even the guys who say I don't like that kind of stuff. Well, they do really. You know, we all do really, and we're all more complex than I'm. You know, than you might be picking up. I mean, I play classical piano, and I like reading. I like books. You know, I read avidly, and I like history, and, you know, we were talking about books I've been reading lately, and I'm trying to wade through Dante's Inferno at the moment, you know. Now, you might not pick that up when you hear my accent and you look at my demeanour. So we're all quite complex, but when it comes to this kind of stuff, just play to the gallery and have some fun, and the blokes really love it, you know. No, they really love it. It's only every now and again, so just go for it. Lanzarote Sports Week is just the role model we've got for residential evangelism. I'm a great believer in getting guys away for a weekend or a week. I think it's fantastic. You know, take away from all the pressures and all the stuff that's going on in life and create an environment where you can do some bushcraft, have a laugh, eat some food and talk about Jesus in a context of a relaxing atmosphere. In Lanzarote, it's a place that costs £1,300 in a brochure. It's a sports venue, but you don't have to do hardcore sports. There's lots of gentle stuff as well, but it's all inclusive. Apart from the foods, all the sports included, road bikes, mountain bikes, use of the gym, the spa, everything, it's all included. But we do that week for £70. All you got to do is bring a mate who's not a believer. Okay, if you can do that, you can come for £70. Eddie's coming out with me this year with his mate, it's going to be a great time. So we can take up to 22 guys now to that. Then it really is that nice. You even get free, you can do a course on windsurfing for free. Teach you how to windsurf and all sorts of stuff. It's great. And then we come on to courses. Now, churches have got their own kind of views on courses. Conservative churches use Christianity Explored. Some charismatic churches use Alpha. Some people don't use courses. What we say is that regardless of what, you know, Bible-centered, Jesus-centered course you're going to use, you create a forum where men can get together and talk about the things of God by themselves. Now, again, some churches start and finish with an Alpha course. And that's what they do. They haven't built the relationships, or they haven't create an atmosphere where proclamation can happen, like in a level 2 event, and they wonder why the Alpha course used to have 100 people and now it has 5 people. And so you need to get the whole thing bubbling along in a cohesive strategy, I think. Each church will work it out for itself. But I do think you need a form where blokes can talk by themselves about the things of God. And I'll tell you why. I mean, to me, it's quite obvious, really, that if the Holy Spirit starts to shine his light into a man's heart, issues of conviction start to happen. And if a man's getting stirred about cheating on his wife, pornography, secret gambling, drinking, rage issues, you know, kids going out of control, whatever it is, or singleness, or struggling with homosexuality, all the kinds of stuff that men are going to be struggling with, he's not going to talk about that on an alpha course with Ethel sitting there. He's just not. But he'll talk about it in front of Dave and Steve, who he's been on level one with, and you know, he's done level two stuff with, and he's now starting to chew over the things of God. He will bear his heart in a safe atmosphere. But he won't do it in front of the women. Now, I'm not saying only ever do single sex courses. I'm saying, understand that men like to debate, men like to argue. They often argue differently to the way that women argue and debate. And they will need to get things off their chest, and they won't do it in front of the women. Nationally, the biggest drop-off in alpha is the men. Most men are left an alpha course by week four or five, actually. Partly because it doesn't fit into their lifestyle, and secondly, I think it's a spiritual issue. So I've always done it with the guys, you know, on their own, in small groups, and the stickability rate is huge. And you tend to find that you've created house groups and discipleship groups and all sorts of things. They just want to keep meeting together. So I just pass that one on as a little aside, really. What we say do is, and you might want to work this out regionally, which would be quite cool. You know, if you can get some kind of hit squad together across the whole region, don't call it a committee, but if you can get some kind of squad or team or unit together and you're working across the area, that is fantastic. But level one, we would say only do that maybe three times a year as an organised thing. And if relationships bubble up in the margins, that's fantastic. You know, that's just what we picked up by listening to stuff that's working on the ground. And there's a reason for that. If you do too much, quality suffers. The budget gets a bit tough on people, particularly if you're paying for things. And you don't have time in the margins for all the stuff of church life and family life. You know, and prayer breakfasts and whatever it is you do, and accountability groups and, you know, Bible study and that kind of stuff. So we'd say even it out and just spread it out a little bit. And the same for level two. Some of our biggest attended evangelistic breakfasts across the UK get over 200 guys at a time, half of whom aren't believers, and only do two a year. Now, I'd rather see 200 non-believers in a breakfast twice a year than 50 blokes, you know, by doing one every month, non-believers. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, rarity has real value when it comes to men's ministry. Do it good. Don't do it too often. Partly quality suffers. The other reason is we need to understand how men communicate. Now, my wife, before we moved 200 miles away from my mother-in-law, bless her, my wife would phone Karen, would phone her mum for half an hour, and then she put the phone down, and I said, "What are you doing this afternoon?" "So I'm going shopping with my mum." And I'd think, why did you speak on the phone for half an hour? You know, why don't you speak to her later? And what are you going to talk about now? You know, how do you do that? You know, how does that work? Because I'd phone my dad up and I'd say, "Hi, Dad, how you doing? How's your prostate?" "Oh, that's good news, mate. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, love you too, Dad. See you, mate." Put the phone down and think, that'll do for 6 months. You know, we're okay. We love each other. We're fine. You know what it's like. I mean, I work with Eddie. I don't see him for 1 month the next. And when I turn up, we're brothers again. You know, we just pick up exactly where we left off. Because we're fellas. We're like that, aren't we? You know what we like. Now, obviously, we're looking for something deeper than that long term, but we're talking about evangelism here, so don't force it. Hopefully, amongst your own circle as Christian brothers, you see each other a little bit more regularly and be a little bit more communicative, but you see where I'm going with that, don't you? So the basic idea we would say is you've got it all planned out, you maybe even have a brochure of activities, which some of our best groups do, it's stuff that's going on through the year. So if you've got someone coming in for a bit of a clay pigeon shoot in September, you've got all the invites ready for Major Carl Benfield's talk on bombs and Jesus. Okay? And then you say, who wants to come to a bombs and Jesus talk? You know, this guy's a bomb disposal expert. He's going to talk about how his faith helps him do his job. You know, who wants to come? And all the guys will say yes, and then no one will come unless you actually phone them up and you encourage them to come or give a personal invitation. Because we're fellas. And don't expect them to book up massively in advance. Expect them to book up either that day or the night before. Because that's what they're like. So you've got to hold your nerve in this game. You really have. And then after that, you say, we've got, you know, 50 places to go and drill stuff. You know, we're going to go to something and use our power tools. Who wants to come, you know? And they'll all say yes, and they won't come, so you've got to do the same thing again. And you just roll it through, basically. Yeah, there'll be guys who are good at organising level one stuff, guys who are good at level two stuff, guys who know how to handle a speaker, guys who know how to run courses. You just got to pull it together. Sometimes churches work together very effectively, sometimes they don't. Over theological issues, but as much as you can have unity, I think it's very, very positive. Some churches work together on level one, level two, then decide to part company at level three type stuff because they've got a different approach, and that's fine. You know, you just do what you've got to do, to see some get saved. Hopefully, many, many get saved. And level four is a bloke-friendly church, which is a whole other subject for another time. So just to finish, we've used the illustration of air traffic control. Now, in the planes over the ocean, it's got one air traffic controller. Plane comes over the coast, it's got another one. Comes into land, it's got another one. Touches down, it's taxiing to its final parking spot, it's got another one. Four air traffic controllers for one safe landing. And so often what we do at churches is get stuck on one level. You've got to have the whole thing, I believe, rolling through all the time, soaked in prayer, prepared for the inbreaking of the Spirit. Anything can happen at any time. But it keeps mission at the forefront. You keep it rolling and rolling and rolling. It's a dynamic, constant activity. And just by way of testimony, I came across a church recently in Market Harbour that we went to see 18 months ago. And they started to do this stuff 15 months ago. And they've grown through conversions in that time, in 15 months, from 150 to 350. Mostly through the men's ministry and then the women and kids following. We're just about to go and film the story at CVM Media because it's amazing. We had another church. It was a sleepy church in rural Somerset. Had a handful of people in the church. We went and saw them. I spoke to just a handful of guys one evening, just like this, just a handful of guys, and they started doing this stuff. The very first evening, they had Noel Fellows come out and do his faith and forgiveness thing about being in prison. 14 guys get saved. 14 guys. 12 of them start going to church, and they brought their families. You know, that over nearly tripled the size of the church in one hit. Now, that's phenomenal, you know. I mean, that's the stuff of revival, really. You know, I think if we soak these things in prayer and we get excited and passionate about them, we start supporting one another, and we get determined and very intentional about mission, and we have a bit of strategic thinking like Nehemiah did, you know, I think we could see some dynamic changes very, very quickly. And some of your churches, you'll have different niches and specialisms. You know, some of you have a real calling to be a resourcing church. Some of you will be powerhouses of prayer and worship. Some of you will be good at networking. Some of you have fantastic venues. You know, you just got to pull together and play to your respective strengths, I think. You could set a region on fire. You really could. It'd be great to become that here and film the story of revival amongst men, you know. It'd be great. I believe for that. I really do. I had a picture when I was at Faith Camp with Paul. I went over during the worship. It's a picture of a light spreading, you know, across the region. It's quite really hit me. So I'm pleased to be here. Oh, we believe something's going to happen. Praise God. So, guys, that's it. Any questions?
Thank you for listening to this Kingdom Faith podcast. We trust it's been an encouragement to you. For more information and resources by Kingdom Faith and for our other audio and video podcasts, please visit kingdomfaith.com/Yorkshire.